second word.
Okay, say it again.
We're going to call the Clean Water Commission meeting to order for the August 6th meeting of the Clean Water Commission. And now we'll do roll call. I am Jim Carlson, Clean Water Commission.
Okay. I am Gary Schaefer, Vice Chair of the Clean Water Commission.
Susan Rasmussen, La Center.
Virginia Van Breeman, La Center.
Brian Kenny, Clean Water Commission. Oops, sorry.
You guys talk over each other. I'm not sure we heard that.
No,
Brian Peck.
There we go.
Still from Vancouver.
Don Benton, Director of the Department of Environmental Services.
Robin Kenny, Clean Water Commission.
Dick Reitender, Battleground.
Dave Meyer, Vancouver, Clean Water Commission.
Melanie Wheeler, East County, Camas.
Bobby Trusty, Environmental Services.
We're all Clark County Clean Water Program, and in the back.
Tom McConaughey.
Good.
Yes, sir.
You'll come out.
All right, perfect. So we have a meeting summary here in our packet, which we need to go over.
So what I'll do is I'll go through this packet of materials. Item one in your packet is the agenda for tonight's discussion. Item two is a summary of the meeting from July 2nd, 2014. And there's going to be the annual report.
Okay. So, where is my meeting summary? All right. Meeting summary. Oh.
Where is it?
When we have that meeting summary from our last, that's what I'm looking for. That's not in. No, I don't believe so.
I think I might have it.
Get an extra one? All right. So, we need to quickly review our meeting summary from July 2nd, 2014. And if there's any, we can approve it or need any amendments on it or anything. It's pretty straightforward.
Say anybody who wants to provide a public comment in the audience, please come to the table up there and speak to the group if you want. We're asking that you come up to the table so you can
all hear you.
Oh, sure.
Everyone want to hear what you have to say?
I didn't realize
the cruises
were so
important. Wait, there's two chairs there. Right? Can't they sit there in both chairs?
Sure. Hey, my name is Jim Calmetta, and I'm just kind of here to learn. The city of Virginia is a long time to get back in property for these days. Don't think some of the segments you have going on there. I guess I'm just here to kind of learn and to kind of understand a little bit better in my mind the full impact of this commission to not only the Clean Water Act, but also for the role of the Major Solutions Act, which is something that I have full interest in since I'm my background, which is why I hope to upon my background. So, I'm just here to learn, actually, and I'm glad to be here. I wish that there were more people here besides all of you. But I'm glad to be one of the people. It's your secretary.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Tom McConaughey. I'm with the Vancouver Lake Partnership. At this time, we are going through a process trying to develop the future of governance for that body. And I wish to indicate that in the past, the county has been very supportive and helpful in supporting that. It looks like, as we move forward, we are at a quandary. I hope that we will be picking up some other partners, and with the picking up of other partners, be able to share some of the responsibility, fiduciary, and other out more. People have complained that it's taken a long time, but the county has, the city, and the court each have contributed about $50,000 each a year. And when it is paid in that manner, we had to wait almost 4 years before we could even consider starting to do a study. And as you have to have so many studies before you can move forward irresponsibly. We can look to the past and we can see where our community made some poor decisions with regard to the lake. And we, in effect, abandoned that lake after we had spent all the federal dollars. And all the people on the partnership are committed to seeing that we do not take a similar stance, where if public dollars are expended, that they would be wasted in such a manner. And they will be local dollars, like if you look at the present state and federal stance at this time, it is very hard to imagine where we would be able to do that. We have, though, been able to attract other groups to help in the study. The USGS paid more, they paid like 60% of the bill to do the nutrient studies, but we still have other things that we need to responsibly move forward on a solution. And we are not really at that point yet where we can responsibly move forward. There are people that say that we should. And if we were to do that, I think that we would be wasting potentially what the public treasury, and other people feel similarly, responsible people. And if we had the money all at once in year one, we could have perhaps in 5 years come up with the necessary studies to make those decisions. But because the manner in which it has been funded, it has been a slow process. And I apologize for that. But there's nothing I can possibly do.
May I ask a question?
It isn't anything that you people can do. You are not one of the public officials that is in charge of this. So I'm not really asking you to do this. This group has never done anything in the past with regard to this. I'm more on the point of informing you what has happened. Have you some questions?
I do. Is Thomas or Mr. Offandy?
Tom.
Okay, Tom. Anyway, number one, I think would be very helpful to understand what you see the issues are. It'd be very helpful for us to understand what you consider the issues are. Also, last week when we had the July 30th, the meeting with the county commissioners, they indicated that they would like to us to look at some maybe proactive plans, as it encompasses, and present them with some ideas for studies and things like that. And I understand what you're saying about it. This group has probably never been involved with what you're doing before, but clean water and is the future for our community and our children and everything else. We just can't go very far without that. So, but you've alluded to issues and studies and things like that, and I was just kind of wondering what issues.
We need to still do a fishery issue study because if by studying the fish, if we can determine that the lake is used as major habitat for salmon lakes, as actually it is, we can tell that because the cormorants and the terns and the mergansers are all feeding upon the fry as they are heading back to the ocean. Each spring, fall, and summer, you will see huge numbers of fish there. So the fish are using the lake, but we have to do a study that, you know, just I saying that they're doing that, taking pictures, I mean, I have to, like, jerk it out of their guts.
Sure.
And, you know, show that, you know, what they're actually feeding upon.
Is there any raw sewage that's flowing in the lake?
Yes, there is. You saw the closure that occurred in July. That was a fecal coliform. And we've had fecal coliform before. We received some of the fecal coliform with regard to the flushing channel, but to tell the source of fecal coliform, whether it be human or bird or otter or child, you know, baby with a diaper, perhaps, we have to do what's called microbial studies. And we would compare the DNA that is alive within that.
So those kinds of studies is what you're looking for funding for?
Pardon?
Those kind of studies are what you're looking for the funding for? Okay.
Those are some of the things that we need, yes, and a sediment study, too.
Tom, just a set, for me, the big setback. You're trying to restore the lake? I hear lots of studies.
It's more than that.
Okay. So I'd like to know what your overriding objective, and then you have to do a bunch of things to achieve that, but are you trying to...
What we're committed to doing is maybe not restoring the lake. Once we have the information in, it may be that this is not economically viable. I mean, we're trying to be objective, we're trying to be responsible human beings. And there are portions of this which are very difficult. The principal amount of nutrients coming into the lake, 90%, is coming in through the Lake River system, which Salmon Creek, Whipple Creek, Flume Creek, G Creek all contribute. The Burnbridge Creek and the Flushing Channel together are only about 9%. So I hate to say it, if we were to look at solutions at this time, within the county.
I'm just trying to understand what your objective is.
Yeah, what does success look like?
So,
we don't know yet. You know, I'm saying it's too soon. If I were to, you know, you're trying to make me jump the gun.
No. I just,
wish I could. If we had received the funding I was saying all at once, and we had all these studies, and we only have one study in.
But aren't your studies going to support your objective?
No. Be rational.
Actually, I am. If I know what the objective is...
The objective may be that it is not feasible.
So, Mr. Thompson, your position at this point is to say that you and your group right now want to let the commission be aware that you are looking at the lake,
right,
studying a lake, to see what different forms of outcomes there might be based on the information that you're extrapolating from a variety of sources. So this is simply more of a, Clark County Commission, this is what we're up to, and you may come back and revisit it once you have more information?
Right.
Okay.
And I'm sure the members of your staff, the county staff, have been very, very supportive of us, and not just... through attending a meeting and sitting at a table. They have helped in the evaluating of these scientific reports. They have helped also in the setting up of contracts, and they have become, they have been the lead agency for the principal studies that have been done.
So it's acknowledging
if it wasn't
that you're
nothing would have been done.
So acknowledging right now you don't really have the ability to give us a more clear focus. Can you please maybe come back and a future set date with your data compiled to the best of what you do have?
Yes.
And your thoughts on that? That would really be beneficial because I see where you're trying to go, and I'm thankful that for you to be here and alert us that you have a group that's looking at the lake. I'm also anticipating and looking forward to further information on your studies and your group's thoughts.
So they are available online if you were interested.
What is that web page then?
It would be Vancouver Lake Partnership.
Vancouver Lake Partnership, all one word?
Yes.
One of the things that happens is, Tom's been down here a lot, but when he talks about the tributaries that flow into it, this is where we run into a lot of issues with clean water and how it affects that lake in there. So you take the simple examples of over-fertilizing lawns, all right, in neighborhoods, would drop into Whipple Creek and drop into Lake River, drop into all the tributaries that feed the lake. That really, and cattle and all sorts of erosion and things like that, that really, that ecosystem is very fragile. Doesn't have very good water flow through it at all. It's a very challenged water body. Can you stop me if I'm saying anything that's off? So, you know, these are things where when education comes in, this is my opinion, right? But there's things that we can do on it. When we go out and we create educational programs for the community, it's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't fertilize that lawn that much, or maybe you really need to read the directions on your fertilizer or your herbicide. There are actually a community in Battleground, and I can't remember what it is, but this was when I was involved with Watershed Stewards, where part of their ordinance or their homeowners association deal was part of your $135 or whatever people pay in homeowners. I live out in my own little property, so stay away. But the part of the homeowners agreement was that, you know, $5 of your $135 or $250 went to a pallet of fertilizer, which was actually dropped off at the homeowners association because we got to have the cleanest lawn out there. That type of mentality leads to significant water quality problems, which all flow downstream into that water body kind of over there. That's one of the issues. Septics are another.
But not anymore. As of 2 years ago, the state of Washington, in complying with the Clean Water Act, restricted phosphorus in fertilizer, and there is hardly any phosphorus at all in fertilizer, which is the principal element affecting blue algae blooms within the lake. And so homeowner contributions are very low.
But okay,
septic tanks are probably a lot higher.
Septic tanks are a lot higher. Now, when I go to Wilco, I buy whatever type of nutrient I want to put on my field. And I actually I'm buffered quite a ways from Whipple Creek in there. But as we know, everything runs downhill, and I do fertilize my fields. Actually, it was since involvement with the Clean Water Commission, and I'm just telling you this, that and Watershed Stewards, that I sat there and paid a lot closer attention than I ever had previously in the past when I sat there and fertilized my pastures, right? Because I would tend to err on the fat side of the application amount opposed to the skinny side of it, because that would be, that way I'm not going to miss anything, right? And so I'm pasturing horses and stuff like that. There's plenty of buffer to keep that away from it. But people really have a total lack of knowledge when it comes to soil management and what their, you know, the cause and effect is downstream. And I have been guilty of that in the past. And All I'm saying is, what I got from knowledge from Watershed Stewards and the Clean Water Commission changed my practices, or I never would have. All right? So those are things that we can actually, work on to, get that message out, I believe, to, make those type of improvements. You can still have a green pasture. The right amount of fertilizer is not harmful. If it's utilized, if the nitrogen and the phosphorus stuff, when it binds into the soil properly, will work and not be a huge detriment. But we make a lot of mistakes application-wise. We just don't have the knowledge out there. So that's opinion.
Well, if you have moles, you have too much fertilizer. Because that encourages worms, and boy, I'll tell you, that's what moles love.
So, anyway.
Well, I just mentioned Tom is no stranger to the commission. You've been coming here for going on, 14 years?
Yes.
So good to see you again.
Thank you.
So, Tom, we've got a lot of new commission members in here, and I'm sure we'll go to the website and see what's going on, but I would encourage you to come back and keep us highly informed on what's going on, and let us know how the timeline's going on it, and then engage us on things that, we kind of deal with flow control and stormwater and stuff like that, so, the septic thing's a little bit out of our gig. Out of the Water Commission gig a little bit, but looking for runoff issues and things like that are things that we definitely want to research and make improvements on. So, thanks.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I interject about a minute or two with those?
Sure.
A couple of bits here. Since the other half of my background is horticulture, I really appreciate what you said. Since I was a pool involved in watershed stewards for a while. One of the concerns that I think that Tom is bringing to all of you is that the priority as far as the testing that's required to move forward in any direction with the organization he's associated with is that testing, that research happen, the data compilation has to be done. And that is from just a small amount that I've been associated, just learning things about the organization, is that kind of data gathering has been a low priority for some reason for that group. And it's been a high priority for Tom because he knows that is like kind of the number one priority before he can make any kind of decisions as far as outcomes and what you want to do with any potential outcomes. So that's just something to consider.
No, I absolutely agree with that because the data is critical for you take and it's how you package that data and get it back out to the public and how we present that and kind of in my opinion on it. It's like, okay, we've got this data set. Now, how do we turn this into the educational piece to sit there and throw it out and make an impact on making changes out there? So I'm fully supportive. Thank you. Go ahead, Gary.
Before we move on to the presentation and discussion, I'd like to introduce a piece of new business, and that would be to amend the annual report from the commission where we strike out the BOCC, or Primary Audits of Watershed Programs. Unfortunately, it was defunded and disbanded. And
okay, we can remove the word defund or disbanded. I mean, that's what I would do. Just take that out.
Where are we looking?
We kind of jumped ahead here.
We did jump ahead. But that actually covered a little later here, but we're on. Let's get it done. Okay.
So
we'll take it out now.
We
have the annual report one last little twist, but we're talking about it. So
the training question was the appointed volunteer list was added to the general volunteer activation program. And so we just want to amend that last part of it.
All right. So
Chairman, where are we in this?
Oh, right here?
Yeah, where are we?
Okay. You got to open up your annual report.
So those are your last piece of information.
Go to the last page of the annual report. And there is a mistake, all right? That's all it was.
The public education and outreach?
Public that the Watershed Stewards was defunded and disbanded in mid-2013. That is an untrue statement, all right? It was defunded. It was not disbanded.
Mine's already marked out.
No, we did on yours.
Okay.
Special. Mine's marked out.
Let's just remove and disband it and make it simple.
Okay, I'd make a motion that we make that edit.
Okay.
Anybody second it?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? There we go. That's done. Okay. Fixed. Just like that. Now we're going to move on.
Can I get a copy of your stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can keep your report.
Okay. Presentation, discussion, recommendation, and actions. Wow, we got to turn it over. How long-winded are you anyway?
I don't know how many questions you have, Mr. Chair.
All right. Fire off there, Director Benton.
Got a couple items on the list here. Just information, bringing the commission up to speed. Just a report on last Friday, letters went out to the three schools. We had three schools that appealed the clean water fee that they were assessed this year. Battleground, Evergreen, and Vancouver Public Schools. We had one other school attempt to appeal about 60 days after the appeal deadline. Of course, there's a process for this, and they couldn't appeal because the deadline for the appeal was passed. So they didn't get in on it. So at the end of the period, July 30th, then I sat down and reviewed all the appeal materials, sent all the schools letters asking them for additional material. Some sent some did not. And in order, the appeal was based, the entire appeal process is based on Clark County Code 13.30A.050, the rate structure in Section D of the Clean Water Program. In order to qualify for consideration of a fee reduction, a school must complete the following criteria. They must implement best management practice training for their custodial and ground staff. The second year, they must do the BMPs, and all of their facilities must pass county inspections, their stormwater facilities. And in the third year, which was this last year, they have to do the BMPs, pass the stormwater, and a school site, in order to qualify for the waiver, must obtain the water module certification out of the Green Schools Program curriculum. The county pays $60,000 a year to a nonprofit organization called Green Schools. And we give them that money to implement, help put the program on here in Clark County so that the schools can participate. And we pay for it. It doesn't cost the schools anything. That was a criteria established by the previous Board of Commissioners and the previous director in a meeting 3.5 years ago. So as we reviewed, we didn't have any evidence that any of the schools had done these things, so they were all billed their regular clean water fee. Three of them said, wait a minute, we've done these things, and so they filed the appeal. So we went through an enormous amount of time, expense of staff, to review and go through all of the criteria. And this was the result. In the Battleground School District, according to our records, the Battleground Public Schools have not completed 2014 or any that we could find best management training provided by free by our department. They have a failing stormwater facility, not passed inspection by the county inspectors. And none of their schools have completed the Washington Green School Program water module. Their appeal was denied in total. That not comply with any of the criteria. In the case of the Evergreen Public Schools, we found, according to our records and records that Evergreen provided to us, that they had in fact completed the 2014 stormwater best management training, that all of their facilities were properly functioning according to county inspections, and that two of their schools, Sunset and York, had completed the Washington Green School Program Water Module certification. The appeal was granted in regards to those two schools. And so they will receive a fee reduction in the amount of $3,309.27 for those two schools that qualify. In the case of the Vancouver School District, We reviewed the material, and according to our records and the records that Vancouver Public Schools has provided to us, they had completed the 2014 dust management practice training. All of their facilities passed the stormwater inspection, and 10 of their 15 schools, and I think 6 or 7 in the last 30 days just before the deadline. So they really were hustling towards the end of the school year. So they really poured it on, good for them. 10 of their 15 schools actually achieved the certification of the clean water module of the Green Schools Program. So their appeal was granted in part for 10 of their 15 schools, and they will receive a 2014 clean water service fee reduction in the amount of $35,319. So they really worked hard to get that done. So that's the outcome of the three appeals. The other schools have paid their fee for the year. And we have notified the treasurer's office of our findings, and they will be cutting refund checks for the clean water fee for the appropriate school districts in the amounts that I've just mentioned. So that was the outcome. Since the schools came and talked to you guys, I thought you'd like to know what the outcome of the appeal was. So.
Am I allowed to ask a question?
Sure.
So just moving forward then for these three schools, are they going to have to continue to pay the fee from this point forward? Or for those schools that may have only gotten a partial waiver, are they being given the opportunity to then qualify if they get that Green Schools certification and have the fee waived in the future?
Great question. First of all, it's not a fee waiver. So let me clarify that for the commission. We don't use that word. It's not a waiver. It's a fee reduction.
Okay.
And we don't waive anything. I have notified the schools, along with the appeal information, that it is highly unlikely, due to increased NPDES permit requirements and associated costs, that there will be any fee reductions in the future. So there may be, but I told them to plan their budgets accordingly. We're not in a position to give away $1 million in clean water fees anymore, which is what we've done over the last 14 years. So. Take it on a case-by-case basis, but I didn't want to hear from them next year, oh, you're pulling the rug out from under us in the middle of a budget, which is what we heard this year. So I let them know it's highly unlikely that there'll be any fee reductions in the future. So
my follow-up question then would be that in the future, for those schools, especially Battleground, that have failed all the criteria, is there going to be some expectation or oversight from the county or from the school districts to assure that their facilities are operating properly, that the proper training is being provided, so they don't think that this is just a one-time deal.
Great
that
question.
They have to continue
great
to be
question.
Diligent and do the level of education that's required in order for
great question. Let me answer that. Other than the water certification module through Green Schools, which we pay for, the other criteria are required by law anyway. Okay, so if like Battleground has a failing system, according to the code, county code, they have a certain amount of time to get that up to speed. If not, they'll be in violation, they can be fined for that, and so on and so forth. So the best management practices and the passing the stormwater inspections are required by law anyway. And so they're pretty good, except Battleground, because we haven't had much communication from them, but they're going through a new superintendent, and so we hope that will improve. The other schools have been pretty engaged in this criteria stuff. They're interested in it. They understand it's the law. They have to do it. And if they do the Green Schools portion of it, which is not required, then they may be eligible, you know, for a reduction in some of their fees. So, okay. But they're fully aware, and our county inspectors are out inspecting all these facilities on an annual basis, and we notify them if they're failing. We give them a certain amount of time to get it up to speed. If it's a real crisis and very expensive, there's room in the law for extensions and help and so on. So we've never really treated the program as a gotcha program. It's more of a can we help you comply approach, which we prefer. And we intend to continue to do that.
Okay.
So, thank you for asking.
Mr. Benson, are there sanctions available against schools who continually fail to meet the expectations?
There are legal sanctions. They can be heavily fined by both the Department of Ecology and the federal.
What about Clark County?
Department of Environment. Normally, we have penalties in our law. We try to help them get in compliance. So rather than try to punish someone, we're always trying to work with them to try to get them to do the right thing.
These programs are expensive for the schools. Years ago,
they're very expensive for all businesses, schools, churches. All of the permit requirements for NPDES are expensive. And it costs people a lot of money to do it. But it's a law, so we don't have any option.
The Lutheran School District, in which I live in, I went to the superintendent and had a talk because they opted out. They have never participated in that.
Well, the reason being, let me jump in there, because the reason being is that when the center was in the county, actually there was one corner of one classroom that was in the county. We decided we're not going to go in and invest county time and energy for one corner of one classroom to say, your fee is $15.
Seriously?
Yeah. So we decided we're just going to exempt them. And then after time went along, the city of La Center boundary extended all around the school. So for us, they're not part of our program. They are fully incorporated within the city of La Center.
I'd like to see Commissioner Rasky get her thoughts out.
Yeah. I've really cherished this relationship that we've had with the schools. We're short on allies, if you haven't noticed. We need every friend we can get. And we have had a struggle with public relations since day one. Some people, you know, they don't know we're here. They really don't. They don't know there's a clean water program in Clark County. Like old Willie Burlett said, no Boeing engineer, he says it takes so many miles to do make a U-turn with a Boeing 747. I figure we're just halfway in that U-turn. And we're just really now, after all these years, getting the word out about a clean water program. Getting to the point, so we've been trying to build bridges all these years, create allies, cultivate that clean water culture in the county. And the schools were probably our biggest ally. And I would really like to salvage this relationship somehow and help them get on board. I don't have to do that.
Are there any methods, Commissioner Rasmussen, since you've got a lot of experience, and I really appreciate that, I listened to you very carefully. Is there any form of, perhaps instead of sanctions, public recognition that we can do, whether it's the Columbian or some sort of public recognition? Congratulations to the following schools for this business.
You know, that presentation that the Vancouver schools did last meeting, I was impressed. So I was all that they are doing.
Sometimes that public acknowledgement of how hard it is to do that, especially on limited funds,
right.
It's just so nice to have. And it publicly acknowledges that we appreciate the relationship we have with this particular school district. And you're not acknowledging necessarily the ones that aren't compliant, but you're not ignoring them either. You're just saying the following school districts and whatever the normal phrasing is.
That would be really nice, Melanie, to get that in the paper, Don. You just said, you know, congratulations, Vancouver School District, 15 of your schools qualify for the Washington Green Schools.
Actually, that would be public.
Just give them the real estate.
And DES, too.
We would have
to give a press release out that says congratulations.
Yep. We have, every year, we pay for a watershed congress. All the schools come together. We recognize all the teachers that are involved in doing these programs. It's either at the Water Resource Center or last year's up at WSU. As I mentioned, the Green School Certification Program puts out press releases and gives awards to the schools. We pay them $60,000 a year to do that. So there is recognition, but there could always be more.
Yeah, sure. And a public, like a public person in Columbia or something like that, a letter of appreciation.
Absolutely.
Coming from us directly rather than someone more paying to do it.
Yeah.
It's one thing to get praised in general, but to have somebody of note and of power say thank you in a very public manner makes us only look better, to be honest.
Excellent idea.
And well, that we appreciate more than what they're doing.
And you need to look at. We need to look at some other opportunities in there and you know, kind of got to, so to speak, peel the onion and find out. Obviously, you know, Vancouver Public, or all public schools didn't come here until they got poked with thorns, did they? They didn't show up. Okay.
Well, so, a couple of them still aren't showing up.
Well,
you know, that's
okay,
the way it is.
They kind of did show up when they got poked with the thorn in the side of, you're going to lose this type of thing. So, I mean, obviously that relationship is challenged. I can tell you that.
No doubt about it.
For a fact.
It cost the schools a lot of money to
and
do this.
That creates, you know, when we get into other stuff, what we're thinking about doing, that creates some barriers. But we need to look at how do we take some of those barriers down. There has to be other opportunity to partner with the public schools, to partner with Clark County on stormwater. For financial benefit for both parties, okay? Because we're in the business of kind of money business when it comes to a lot of the stuff that we do. So, you know, those are options that we need to be explored, and that's where, you know, we should probably reach out to the school districts again and say, hey, look, you know, I'm sorry, this is gone. This is the way the funding cycle is. Let's go look. Let's work together and look for other opportunities to create a mutual benefit for both of us to prosper off of and to, you know, keep our costs down on it. There's economies of scale in partnering. There always is. And those are actions that I really think need to be pursued, either from environmental services, or have us investigate it as the Clean Water Commission and come back and say, hey, look, here's some ideas we saw. We don't want the schools only to show up. I want the schools here at like every meeting, right? Because they're a big partner. They have one of the only education programs out, not one of the only education, I strike that comment. They have a great education program out there that we need to be going out and talking to them. We need to help them with part of that, okay?
Absolutely.
And from a policy standpoint of, so people that, as they move along, understand how a lot of this policy making works and why things happen.
Absolutely.
So it's an opportunity for us as a Clean Water Commission to do things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity for services.
And part of our assigned task with the NPDES permit is public outreach and education, those two vital components. And I've always valued that relationship with the schools because they bring to the table a vast assemblage of work that's on the ground already that we can't match for public outreach.
Right.
I mean, you've got to figure every one of those little ones has, you know, 2, 4, 6 adults that they interact with during that week. And you bet that those grandparents and parents, aunts and uncles, they're listening to what those little kids bring home. And they'll hear about it. Hey, Mom, turn off that light.
That's true.
You know.
That's true. They
we can't begin to match that network that those schools have.
Okay. That's good. We need to keep moving through this agenda, but that was a very good discussion, I thought.
Excellent.
Good
input. Thank you. All right, the next item is the Clean Water Program Fee Study. As you know, the Board of Commissioners approved a new ordinance with the exception of the polluter fee. They approved the ordinance that you recommended. There was one addition, and that is they felt that multifamily homes should pay the same whether they were inside or outside the urban growth area. So they did make that change. all multifamily residences will pay the fee, whether or not they're inside or outside the urban growth boundary, they will pay the urban growth boundary.
What line
is I was going to say, go to page 6, section F.
You have the ordinance, it's on page 6.
Section F, that's where Sean's talking about, and he goes on to page 6 of 6.
So,
come on to page 5.
Instead of adopting the polluter fee, the board determined that it is crucial to reevaluate the current methodology of assessing the clean water fee in the county, and that the department shall prepare a comprehensive study and report back to the Board of Commissioners within 1 year on the adoption changes to this section, with an examination of alternative methods for collecting the clean water fee. The focus of the study shall be an examination of the allocation of the fee to those whose behaviors and or conduct generate higher pollutant impacts on the surface and groundwater of Clark County, and the Board of Commissioners shall acknowledge receiving the study through a public resolution and or affirmation of this section. And so basically what the board is saying is, you know, maybe you're on the right track here with this polluter fee, but maybe it should apply to other people. Maybe it should be higher. Maybe it should be lower. Maybe so. Why don't we take a year before we implement fees on polluters and analyze this and see if the chemicals in your lawn fertilizer, you know, if Dow Chemical is responsible, and if so, to what percentage? Newspapers are in the storm drains and they're clogging up the storm drains, to what percentage, Coke bottles, etc. Because our report to them indicated we didn't just find newspapers, we found a lot of polluters in the preliminary work that we did. The newspapers were the easiest to identify where they came from. You can't tell whether that Coke bottle comes from 7-Eleven down the street or whether it comes from Safeway. So they want us, and there are some examples out there. There's a couple of cities in California. In fact, the California Caltrans did a very comprehensive study on what they find in their storm drains and whatnot. 14% of it was paper. So they want us to do something that is more comprehensive, because they recognize that continuing to put the fee on the homeowner, who likely is not contributing to the problem any more than they were when we started the program, to pay for those who are contributing more and more to the pollution and the problem, isn't fair. And if the NPDES permit, which it does every 5 years, adds yet more and more requirements, which cost more and more money, eventually your clean water fee could be as high as your property taxes. And I don't think anybody wants that to happen. So they're looking at a way, or at least trying to find some way, to share the cost and have those who are responsible for that increased cost pay a larger share. That's the goal. And so the reason I'm here tonight is in large part based on the commission's desire, not only voiced at this meeting where they adopted this, but voiced in many of my meetings with them, and it was voiced again in the board commission interaction just last week, to engage the commission and gather ideas and input from you on things you'd like to see in the study, or how you think the study might be conducted, other areas that should be looked at in the study. And so I'm not going to ask for that tonight, but I want you to be thinking about this, and maybe at your next meeting, and when I'm not here, if you do it in your own presence, have a free, willing discussion of what a polluter study might look like and might include. And maybe you could put together some notes and a report and make some recommendations to the department on what you think should be included in that polluter study. Because I think your feedback from your area in the county, where you come from, your neighbors, you know, as Susan has said, she talks to a lot of folks in farm forestry or the dairy group, and you each have your centers of influence. If you can kind of go reach out, get some feedback, and then bring that back, collate that as a commission, and maybe offer us some written document as to the things that you'd like to see. That will help us as our staff begins. As soon as we're done with the budget process, we are going to start then doing our own brainstorming on getting ready to produce this study, which will take some time. And so the timeliness of it will be great. Budgets will be finished, you know, probably end of September, and then we can start in earnest on preparing it to conduct this comprehensive study. So I'd like your input.
I have a question for you, Director Benton. And one of them is that following the 80-20 principle, which is typically always true for the most part, is that, you know, 20% of the entities that are creating pollution are creating about 80% of the problem. So if we had some good data on what we do actually find in the storm drains, okay,
right.
That way we're not going to go out on some little tangents of wasting our time and saying, hey, you know, Joe over there, I think we could fix that. We need to, you know, what are the core pollutant issues that we see, urban and rural? Have those defined.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you hand that off to us at there, then we could do analysis on that and make some recommendations. So that would be one thing that I would like to see, you know, so we stay focused on a couple of, you know, stay focused on the major components of what we're finding as our problems.
I think at this stage, Jim, we're looking for a much bigger picture than that. We don't want to focus on one or two items. That's what I did in focusing on the newspaper, and it was rejected by the board.
Well,
we want your input on what else should we be looking at.
Well, because we have studies from California that have extensive studies already to look at.
Yeah.
Can we get copies of, are they,
or
what does that look like? How could we get
about 117 pages?
could you give us something that looks like
17
pages?
We're still gathering stuff from all over. Okay.
Mr. Ben, do you have an identified list of known bigger polluters here in Clark
County? We did have a staff brainstorming session where we came up with 16 items that contribute costs to our clean water program. And this came from staff that's been working out there in the field for years, and it was really just a brainstorming. I stood at the board and said, okay, if you were the clean water czar for a day, who would you charge, you know, to pay for this?
I'd like to see that.
And they kind of started throwing it out, you know, we should charge more for pet licenses because dog poop, you know, it messes up the water.
It does.
Dog poop. It does.
It's a pretty major contributor.
We have a very specific education program that we do. Okay, to help people understand that, right? And that, you know.
She trained the dog to do it. That's new area.
Yeah, there you go. Excellent. I wonder how much that would cost.
So I mean, we got
to
train them on how to do the inside out with the bag.
Another one was, we shouldn't take these stormwater facilities for free. We should charge. Well, guess what? The commission adopted that one. I presented two ideas that were out of the box. One was to charge a penny, you know, to help recover newspapers. And another was to start charging developers for their stormwater facilities if we're going to take them over and manage them and maintain them for 20 years. They adopted the one. They want more comprehensive data on the other, which is fine. I agree with that. So,
can you send us?
But I'll be happy to get to that list. It's on the website. We had a work session with the board on that, right, on those 16 or 17
They were presented one. I don't know if you weren't.
How's it work?
I think what you're asking us to do right now, it seems like we're kind of putting the cart before the horse here. You're asking us to weigh in on the appropriate methodology for which you can define potential sources and measure quantitatively what the contribution levels might be for those various different sources, if I understand you correctly. And I think that was the intent behind the meeting that we had a couple of months ago, was that we wanted you to come back with a plan and an approach to, in a scientific and hopefully more quantitative way, identify what those potential pollutant sources might be. And if that's what you're asking us to do, I would hope that we can provide some sort of ideas to what that methodology might look like without getting into details. I was hoping that you would actually have a plan that then you could vet with us by the next meeting, but it doesn't sound like with the budget process going on that that would be possible. But I think it's important for us to be able to provide some initial input.
And that's why I'm here today. Before we get too far down the road, we want, and you have said it exactly right, that's the kind of input we're looking for.
And that's what I think is going to form the basis for a sound, somewhat semi-quantitative, at least based evaluation, where you might even possibly enlist some students from Washington State University to go spread out over the county and just do some initial evaluation. They love this kind of work.
Okay,
excuse me, Dick, I'm going
to... Or color code, whatever.
Go ahead.
I dug this out of my archives, just to be a dust off. I don't know if this is from 1999, but this is Exhibit E from the Clark County Clean Water Funding Task Force, before this commission was established. And this is a summary of public comments on how to fund this, pass this around.
I think it would be worth using that information as well as the approach that you've taken up to this
point. But you're right, we need some substantial data to base this on.
If I may interject, I've gone through your attachment and you sent it to me. So I've gone through it and I compared it with what we're doing today, which Director Benton was talking about earlier. And I have to say, there's a lot of good information in what's called Exhibit E. What it really talks about in Exhibit E, it talks specifically about fertilizer tax and pesticides. It talks about money from road fund. It talks about residential density development. It talks about current budget using the lottery, dog license fees, development fees, municipal bonds for capital projects. It also talks about getting grants and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in this attachment for Exhibit E. And then I went back and looked at what we were talking about just a few months ago, and voila, that's a lot of the same stuff, because there's a lot of information. It wasn't like reinventing the wheel, it's just people got together and started talking about these different things, and there's a lot of overlap between what was in Exhibit E from 1999 with what we see today, which was done over the last few months. So you won't find a lot of new stuff in Exhibit E. What you will find is a lot of good stuff in Exhibit E that has been done for a variety of purposes, for a variety of times, just to get this program started. So what I'm going to say is that if I'm tasked with this project, which I am tasked with this project, I'm going to use Exhibit E. I'm going to take the notes from them, from that time frame. And what I did, I wrote up a little funding comparison between what was Exhibit E material and what we're doing today. And what I found was, in my conclusions of this recommendation of this funding information, is that we're pretty much the same. There are not really any differences between Exhibit E versus what we're doing today. And what I will say is that we want to probably do a lot more detailed analysis of what we're proposing so that when we go forward from this group, bring in your thoughts, share that information with staff, put that together in a nice little report, a draft report, and then we take that to the Board of Commissioners. As far as that goes, then what we might want to do as a group, I'm just throwing this out there, is like what Don was saying, talk with your people, whoever you're associated with, and make sure that they have an understanding of what we're trying to do. Because if we don't have an understanding, if they don't have an understanding of what this group's about, and what you're trying to do, it works worthless.
And also, there's an extensive studies that have already been done in California. It would be a good idea for us to get maybe not the whole 150 pages, but a summary of that, so we could review that, also with the data.
Okay, perfect. So I'm going to go around to Smith, Tom. Go ahead, Dick.
And I haven't forgotten. Just a personal observation. When you're trying to address a topic, come up with ideas and suggestions, one of my biggest concerns is that you pollute the process by interjecting the opinions and views and materials of others. I understand that there may be duplication. But one of the things, just personally, that I try to avoid at all costs is contaminating my thought process by the things that have been done in the past, or that somebody else is doing somewhere else. It's just me. Because what I don't, I want my clean thoughts, probably 98% of what I come up with will have already been addressed. But you know what? If there's 1 or 2%, it really is distinctly different. But if I'm paying attention to everything else from the past, then I personally find that I don't tend to come up with as much in the new way of new innovative ideas. Just an observation. Thank you very much.
Perfect.
So, Dick, what you're saying is, while we staff people might look at the past and try to do a comparative analysis, compare and contrast, what you would like to do is do your own thought process and then help us as staff people come up with maybe some original stuff that we haven't thought about. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm hoping that we would come up with things that either are twists that are novel or different enough, and I'm just concerned that it's polluted. It's so easy. I teach classes on creativity and innovation. Okay? And one of the things I teach is you got to be incredibly careful about polluting, because then you get into a mind sink and you only follow a certain path because other people have already been talking about those things. And if you're thinking the old overused term, out of the box, right? Can't hardly stand that term. But nonetheless, you've got to be doing things. Years ago, there was a guy who was a motivational speaker, and he said, find out what everybody else is doing and don't do it.
Okay. I tend to agree with you, Dick. I need Thomas to wait there for a minute.
I'll be very, very brief. Plastic bags are a real problem at almost all households. Additionally, if we're looking at all the money coming out of the Clark County Treasurer, also under the Environmental Services is the sewer treatment plant. Talking to the maintenance workers at that plant, and plastic bags make them actually have to fix some pumps in that system as many as 3 times a day, that they have to break down a pump and go completely through it. And if you talk to those people there, they're also part of the problem. You know, we should take them as part of the solution too. This plastic bags is affecting a lot more than just stormwater.
Actually, that's a really good point, Tom. And that would be somebody interesting to go out and to reach out to. It's like, because it's a little out of our, it's not clean water, but it's sewer, okay, which we have separated systems. But it's like, it would be kind of cool for me, of course I like science, to see what they identify as some of their major issues and then see where we cross. Go ahead, David.
I just want to make a point, I think, to Dick's comments over here, being a consultant for the last 35 years and a bit of a science geek and using the scientific method. Asked information like this is good information. It's a data point in time. And it should be taken as such as a data point in time. What I see here were a lot of email surveys that were sent out, but what I didn't see was a methodology to collect quantitative data on what the potential pollutant sources might be. And that's what we're really trying to get to in order for the Environmental Services Department to do its job correctly and present a scientifically based evaluation that supports the fee. Or lack thereof, or however, whatever the approach might be. This is the second phase right here in looking at and vetting various different ideas, but that needs to be based on data and collection of data and doing on-the-ground surveys to the extent that you can over this next period of time. So while there's a potential to be influenced by other surveys, I still believe that it has value as a data point, but it needs to be taken in an objective way and allow you to use that information as that data point to form your own conclusions after you've had the opportunity to collect data. And that's, at least for, now this is my opinion only, but my feeling is that in order for this to be a sound, scientifically based study, you have to get out and you have to collect data somehow.
That's right.
And it's a matter of how much data, and how far, what the physical reach is out throughout the county, in urban areas and rural areas, and I want us to be able to provide that type of input to the department so that they can design this study in a way that's going to be
that data
scientifically sound.
Is for the most part available. isn't it? I mean,
that, there may already be that data there. Yeah. It's just a matter of the
collect. Right.
Do you know, backing up what David said and what Dave said, I've been on many, many project task teams when I was working, when I was at Boeing, and leading a lot of teams, and nothing sinks a project or stymies the progress of it faster than somebody says, well, this is the way we've always done it. You know, I'm not taking in fresh ideas and fresh data. And I think that's what both Dick and David were sharing with us, is that we need to find out what's the case now. What's actually coming down the pipe, not what went down the pipe a couple years ago.
I want to chime in. I completely agree that that's a very valid thing that happens, and you're right, my own company, nothing drives me crazier than we've always done it this way, so we can't do it differently. Having said that, though, I'm still on a fairly significant learning curve, and having that historical data would be hugely helpful to me, like what was the thought process to how we got here. So
that was exactly.
It'd be educational for me to have access to that.
It was a process, and I'm interested in on how we arrived funding this back, you know, darn near, what, 15, I don't know.
15 years ago.
Well, that's the beauty. People will dig into some stuff. I will avoid it.
And when I took that to the commissioner,
but you know what? That's terrific.
Commissioner Melky said, well, Susan, this is old data. It's, you know, this is obsolete. You're right. But this is all we have that says what the people's perception was at the time, how this should be funded. So,
Commissioner, I actually like this report, not necessarily for the numbers or the percentages, but in reading it, it's giving me ideas in turn for other types of things that are usable. For instance, what Mr. Banton has mentioned, his group, so I'm looking through here, and it is really actually beneficial to see different stepping off points. And again, I'm not looking at the numbers because clearly they're different over 15 years, but this is a good starting point to think what might work, what doesn't work, and just maybe give a base idea might lend itself to a future idea. So if you have copies, I'd love one.
We can email it out.
That would be good.
Okay. And then if you don't want to read it, don't open it.
I won't delete it. Just go into the folder.
I might have.
Not that I won't look at it. I'll look at it later.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Let me just jump in on what Tom said, because he's absolutely right. It's not just the sewage thing. If you go down to West Vancouver Recycling Center, which our department is also responsible for, you'll find that that recyclable sorting line has to be shut down a minimum once an hour, sometimes more often than that, because the plastic bags get caught in the rollers. And somebody has to crawl up into the roller with a knife and cut those bags out. And the downtime to the system is enormous on a daily basis because of guys having to crawl in and cut those plastic bags out. We have embarked upon and are going to launch a very large education effort this year on recyclables and what you put in the cart, and trying to convince people that we all want plastic bags in those recyclable carts is a very difficult thing to do, because they think they're doing the right thing by recycling the bag.
That's pretty interesting, because they don't, you know, the recycling doesn't really, they don't want that bag.
No, we do. We don't want
it's not
bags
a, it's not
in our
plastic
sewage.
Bag.
We don't want it in our lake. We don't want it in the recyclables. You know? It's really hard.
So when is Clark County going to ban the grocery bags?
We can't. We don't have the authority to. It's a state, it's a state issue. And that has come up on a number of times. And in fact, different jurisdictions, Thurston County for one, just had the court strike down a ban that they had. So,
how come in Portland can do that? I mean, is it just they look at
state things? Law, Oregon state law, Washington state law. Okay, and so the state legislature struggles with that too, honestly. The grocery business is a very, very powerful lobby, clearly. And if you do paper bags, it costs them a lot more money. What a lot of retailers are doing is they're voluntarily replacing it with paper and then just charging you a penny a piece
for the bags.
We'll just charge them a penny a piece for their bag. It'll cost the same as paper then.
Yeah.
And you're supporting the
so big deal then.
That's the plastic bag issue is a big issue. It came up. It was one of the 16 that was on the board, clearly, because people in the business are pretty aware of the problems those present. They get stuck in the weir. The water doesn't run over the weir properly. And, I mean, there's all kinds of problems. So, but it was deemed by the research committee that looked at all 16 of those and trying to bring forward the most viable that could be done now without a whole lot of extra work, along with the can and bottle tax. The bag was marked as a state issue. County doesn't have appropriate authority. They could, but the legal ramifications and the legal cost of people suing us, you know, it just wasn't determined to be worth it. But a comprehensive study that's based on good, sound scientific methodology might be just the ticket to be able to convince policymakers that it is worth the risk to go ahead and do something like that, right? And so that is another reason why I think we need a good, solid, scientific study.
However, if we need to move on, but I would make a comment on, so as we look at what we charge for impervious surface, I'm not talking about a bag tax, but we could say that a grocery store, because of the impact of a grocery store, their impervious surface rate needs to be higher. There's lots of reasons for that. Okay, there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'm talking your large chain stores. I'm not talking some of the mom and pop, but.
Well, you're on track with an idea that one of the staff members came up with, and that is every time you apply for a building permit, you have to put down what your traffic count you think
yeah,
your traffic count is going to be.
You follow that. Okay. If you follow and, that, yeah. You can follow money.
Exactly. If you got 5,000 a day traffic count
yeah.
as opposed to 100 a day traffic count, you're going to have a bigger parking lot, you're going to have more concrete, you're going to have more asphalt, it's going to be dirtier because there's going to be more cars dripping oil on it.
No, it's going to be dirtier.
So he was trying to say, well, you should have a fee tied to the traffic count. I said, there's an idea, you know, because that is a way to determine the level of impact caused by your facility.
If you look at the highest traffic, including, and you don't build anything unless you have a lot of pass-by traffic. So you look at fast food restaurants are charged one of the highest fees, period, because they have the highest amount of traffic going through it. If I'm paying a tip fee, I'm going to pay a lot of money for a McDonald's.
Yep.
So when you sit there and you take a look at that, and you find, and this is what I encourage all of us to do, drive down the road, see what you see in the ditch. So you're going to see plastic lids, McDonald's cups, maybe some Starbucks cups. Most of those guys sit around there and drink their coffee and throw it away. The other high traffic impact fee areas, which are your large supermarkets, your Walmart, your Fred Meyer, things like that, same amount of super high traffic impact fee, okay? Also, one of the highest polluters of plastic bags, things like that. Go ahead, Dave.
Just in the interest of moving on.
Okay.
And knowing that you're going to be starting to look at this issue in October, which is around the time that the next meeting is.
Okay.
I would like to at least propose that in the interim that either we as a group or an ad hoc smaller group get together and vet some of these ideas and put some ideas and together related to what this study might look like and what the next steps might be so that we can provide some input to Mr. Benton and Earl and the rest of the team.
That would be very helpful.
What I marked down here is what's the due date?
There you go.
So yeah. That's the same thing for me is what? When do you want something from this group by?
I want something from this group by the end of September at the very latest, but that does not preclude you from providing additional data going forward. We'll take that initial stuff that you give us. We will craft, as Dave said, was hoping to craft some kind of a idea or sample, come back, kind of vet that. So there will be ongoing, but it'd be nice to have an initial input from this group by the end of September, if possible.
That would probably be 1 month too early.
Your next meeting is September 3rd.
So,
because this is an off month.
You might have an ad hoc committee that could meet
in the interim. Oh, September 3rd?
September 3rd is your next full Clean Water Commission meeting.
So we meet every other month right now. We're having an extra meeting there to digest some things that came out from the other thing. So I would say that we could have something. I think that September is optimistic, unless you guys want to work on it immediately right away, which we all do. I would probably put that out, unfortunately, into November, okay? And I think that's a realistic time for us to get something to you. Is that fair?
That's fine. We will probably be working on it in a parallel fashion.
That's fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, because the data could be joined together at
there
that time.
There will be nothing set anywhere close to known by then, so that's fine.
I'm kind of feeling like I'm chomping at the bit.
Well, then start working on it.
I'm
start
more than willing to help.
So that November meeting is the 5th?
September 3rd, and you guys could make...
No, but then the every other meeting after that,
after that.
Is November 5th, is that correct? Mm-hmm.
We'd go September, not October, and November.
October 1st would be the interim.
So the last two meetings, let me interject, the last two meetings of this group is going to be September and November.
Okay.
There's no meeting in October or December.
Unless you guys call a meeting.
Right. Okay, so I got a question for you, David. Since you're chomping at the bit, you're in charge of this project. So,
and that's fine. I would be willing to at least develop some initial framework of some ideas and hopefully present those at the September meeting.
That would be great. So you're going to be on the agenda.
And if anybody else wants to join.
Anybody else who wants to sit there and chip in and help David out on that.
David, I will help you. You just have to let me know how you see it and what you want me to do.
I'd like to come and listen.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to help you, David. I'm going to miss the September meeting, and this is something I would really enjoy.
Yeah, this is all good stuff. I'll help too. So put together some framework. Get us out an email on what you're, you know, what's boiling through your head right now, because I can see, man, all the stuff's moving through there, and you're excited. So.
Yeah.
And I want to help. We all want to help you keep that energy going on that and present something.
Okay.
So we can kind of work on that. All right. That's
thank you. Excellent. That's exactly what we're looking for. I appreciate it.
All right. Next.
The only other thing that I had was the report on the Clean Water Commission and the annual report with the board. And I wanted to just share with you from some of the notes that our staff took on what we got out of that meeting that the commission had with the board. We heard that the commission is interested in the following: reviewing and commenting on the Clean Water Program fee schedule, start working on the Stormwater Association multi-use program, SWAMP, continue educating the community about clean water and making meaningful recommendations on policy to the board. The board thanked the commission and for your service and your commitment and made the following recommendations to the commission. The commission should work with the Department of Engineering and Advisory, the DEEV, which both I think Gary and Dick attended here just recently, the Development Engineering and Advisory Board, and Clark County Department of Community Planning to make sure that the Clean Water Program is incorporated in the Clark County Comprehensive Land Use Plan. The Commission was interested in that. Also asked that you review the Clean Water Program fee study on stormwater polluters. So you're both in line on that issue, which is a result of this great discussion that we've had today on the topic. So those were the points of the meeting with the board. The board didn't say a lot, but what they did say, I think, would encapsulate
it. What page are you on?
I'm not on a page. I'm just reading from some of my notes, but I think staff can provide you with a recap of that.
Yeah.
They don't see him in the minutes.
They're not.
No, he's not.
He's
not
reading
there.
From some prepared material. It's not in your packet.
That would be helpful if we could get a copy of that.
Sure.
Happy to get that. And that's really all I have. I just wanted to comment on, I thought the interaction with the board was good. I think it could have been better. I would have liked to see more of the commission there and have more of a dialogue, you know. But it's hard because it's in the middle of the day and many of you work and so on. So, you know, it was only an hour, and I think it took the whole hour. Didn't you use up the whole hour, Jim?
An hour and 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Susan was there.
Gary?
You were there, Susan. Gary was there.
Virginia.
Virginia. And Dick.
Don, can you refresh me why they wanted us to weigh in on the update of the comp plan?
They wanted to make sure that you had some interaction with the planning department so that planning would consider clean water issues as far, you know, in terms of the update of the comprehensive plan. That's what I got out of it. What did you get out of it? Well, I mean, you were there too. So.
Right. I think they're talking about clean water, but what they're really talking about is NPDES permit requirements. So that when the comp plan is put forward, whoever's working on the comp plan has a clear understanding of what are the requirements from the Department of Ecology, from the federal government, for EPA requirements, and any other stormwater-related issue. Because it was years ago, when we sat down with the comp plan folks, what we discovered was that they didn't have a clue as to what's going on with stormwater. They didn't really understand that their projects were being built. And they didn't understand that at that time that there were projects being built in areas where they shouldn't be built. I mean, talking about development projects.
I think they said it was in a nutshell. If we're going to have a 20-year comp plan, we should also include the stormwater plan in that because it's going to consider, you know, growth and development and new, you know, changing requirements and stormwater runoff because of, you know, more impervious surface and the pollutants and things like that. And what do we do? And you know, are we going to have to look at some point, you know, more stormwater or treatment plants or something like that rather than allowing everything to just run into the rivers like what we do now. So they said if we're going to have a 20-year comp plan, we should include stormwater management in that 20-year expectation plan, although we can't foresee what's going to come out of federal and state environmental regulations. But at least we can have a straw horse to work from.
That's a good point because they don't really, I was really actually fairly heavily involved in, as a citizen during the last comprehensive plan update. And typically what happens on that, just so you know, is, you know, they take a look at it and they have their available lands, they do projected population increases, all right, and they try to do their best to keep the, you know, they want to create density inside the urban areas and infill if they can. And then every city comes in and wants to expand their urban growth or their boundary, which, and where they're going to annex and things like that. And in order to do that, typically annexation is providing services. Sewer would be probably one of the biggest things in there. So they provide the services, they get the extra land. What foils comp plans, Richfield wanted to expand quite a bit. They didn't have enough outfall for their sewer. It was 7 million a day, I think, was their outfall, and they had to create, you can only put outfall so far apart going into your river, okay? And
what's outfall?
Outfall off sewage treatment. That's an outfall. So,
discharge, it's a
discharge point.
And is that dark water or clear water?
Well, it's clear water. It's treated water. It goes through the process of sewage treatment.
It's treated.
It's treated water comes out of a sewage treatment plant. Anyway, so the commissioners, no, can't expand it. You don't have enough outfall. You can't handle any more growth because that's actually a fairly easy calculation on how many people and how often they.
How much liquid they generate.
So, but they never really looked, they didn't look at all, the last time on anything to do with stormwater. And they probably won't be, part of what they're trying to do on that is look at, hey, how much do we have to expand, you know, what percentage do we need to include for stormwater in our land models? That's my guess, is kind of what's going on with it. I know a little
not a whole lot of how it works, but and really what they don't know is a lot of the cause and effect. By putting this industrial site at the top of this hill here, and I'm modeling it because all the land's colored. Yellow is residential, red is a mixed use, blue is a business park, and I might be off in the color, I'm just using it for an example. But the so what they do that, they find a transportation corridor, even if it isn't the best one, and they put the density where they believe it is best served. And it's not always best served for the environment. So community development actually has to take a different thought process on where do we put these colors of developable land, what is the best way to filter our, because all we do is filter the water and let it get back absorbed into the system. That's all we do with the MPDS permit. It's basically we control the flow, filter, clean the water, let it go back in. That's what that whole thing's about. It's pretty simple. And you tell me if I'm off base on it.
Pretty simple.
And so I'll quit now, in just 1 second. That's where us being involved or putting input into what they do in the comprehensive plan update, we can protect areas that we know are sensitive, okay, through information we get on that. So they just don't follow it right now. Not because they don't have the knowledge. It's not engaged between the departments a whole lot. Am I wrong? Right. It's better.
I think there will obviously be more communications between what we do in stormwater and what they do in the comp plan process. So it's going to be helpful if this group wants to have advice, provide them advice, provide us advice so that we can work with those folks in detail. It would be great maybe to sit in on a DEEB meeting if it's appropriate for you guys to attend one of those, just to hear what's going on and then have an opportunity to comment during that time frame as well. As far as the Department of Community Development goes, that's another story. You'd have to sit in on those discussions just to get a flavor of what's going on.
Good.
That's another work effort somebody will have to do.
I'll do that because I'm familiar with everybody in site community development. But I'll have some discussion on that. Just so you know, the other thing on when the comp plan update goes on, so you think that all these farmers and everybody who live out in the country would like to preserve their land and do it? Yeah, you're shaking your head the right way.
You want to get rich.
because there's more money in planting houses in supermarkets than there ever will be in farming. So they all beg to be, all of them, beg to be inside the urban growth boundary. And I have witnessed that straight up.
We want options, Jim.
They want to be, you got an option if you're inside. You can farm inside the urban growth boundary, but they want the option to sell the land and plant houses on it at $1 million an acre. If you got 40 acres, you're doing all right. So.
Yes, but there is one thing I must comment. As an older person, I realize that maybe a 5-acre piece would help with the rest of them.
With what?
Well, the home where you have to go to when you get incapacitated because you're too old.
So she's maybe indicating that she'd like to flat out her lawn. Perhaps sell the
have
property
some money
to pay
there
for her.
Available for that.
To pay for future.
My friend Delvina, just 98, finally had to give up. And, that day might come. And
it's
nice to have 5 acres to sell off to help support it.
I know it. And we need to get off this, Tim, because we're way off clean water. But that is an extreme challenge.
$1 million just to have some
support. Just enough to pay for it, yeah.
How about we build a, this is my idea. How about we build a clean water facility on there, on part of your property there? You could get some, we'll pay a lease for it. That's out of the box type of thinking. But
also underground water in my whereas
anyway,
is on its way down to the Lewis River.
Dang it. That's a good spot.
Nice and clean.
Good spot
for your property.
Good spot to stop it. Go ahead, Tom.
You know, one strategy you might think of in approaching the subject is trying to establish your retention facilities as high within the system as possible and offline from regular streams and wetlands. I think those would be two really good strategies that would be environmentally positive choice.
So, no question about it. What we like to do, around here is when we find that flat land after it's come off the hill and all flowed off, we like to build on it. That's one of the problems with what we lie in.
Mr. Chair, I have nothing else.
Okay, thank you. All right. I agree with you, Tom.
Well, something to consider if you're waiting.
The annual report. We're down to that. Okay. We already talked about the annual report. We made a revision to the annual report.
Yeah, I gave you the...
So... Well... We could be done a little bit earlier. Go ahead.
I would just like to thank our chairman, Jim, for writing that report. It was a good one. Nice and short and sweet. And we got everything done.
It'll be a short one next year, too, if I'm still here.
Thank you, Jim.
So, this is great that we've got some energy going on working on some stuff. And we still need to, on the annual report again, I'm going to go and briefly discuss swamp. That's the one that gets my brain spinning around. And after we take care of some of the stuff that we're going to work on with you, David, on there, is, you know, Dick and I talked a little bit one time at coffee in there, but I do want to go out there. I think it's really important for us to go out there and start trying to identify the barriers that keep us from creating good partnerships in the clean water program. The example of it goes, I appreciate what Commissioner Melke says that, the state builds a nice stormwater pond. Well, the thing is, which is nice, I do, they build a nice one. The thing is we can't use it, we can't share it, okay? So we're going to build, we build our own. And
not entirely true. We have 17, maybe 19, we're in the process of inventorying stormwater facilities that take both state highway stormwater and county road stormwater.
That's good. So that's typical, that's probably not the norm for the most part. And the other thing has to do with the partnership between the public and the private side thing as far as building the infrastructure that's needed. We look at compartmental or small systems that we put all over the place. Probably the way that we're going to keep doing business for a while, but when we look at an area that's going to develop, I'll just use the 179th area, which has a lot of hilly topography, a fair amount of wetlands in there, feeds into Whipple Creek, feeds into Mill Creek out in that area. Both of those have impacts on the lake down there because they, both the watershed that they ultimately feed into. That crosses a lot of jurisdictional boundaries between the city of Battle Ground, between Clark County and Richfield are all involved in that process. And if we look at a system holistically as a system, and we take a look at the area holistically, and then kind of map out what it needs to look like to be an efficient system and to work, we're going to be sitting there creating a lot of partners with public-private institutions to build a system that actually works and is cost-effective to build so we can clean the water. That's where I go with some of that stuff there.
Back on what you previously said there, we need to identify the barriers that keep us from working with potential partners.
Absolutely.
I'm not clear right now. Maybe we need, as a first step, we need to establish who our potential partners might be. And then look at what the barriers might be.
And that's one, when Dick and I were talking, it's like we had the city of Battleground in here, and that's one of our potential partners to look at. The state of Washington is one of our potential partners, and that's a project that we should go down. I mean, that's a little sampling that we could do, but we need to have, you know, a set of, you know, what are our questions? What are we looking for out of these meetings when we set them up out there to get the information to bring back, to identify the barriers, to put together and to put to the
you know, put to the Board of County Commissioners. You know, there are barriers between the state of Washington and Clark County.
Well, considering the fact that they owe us 3 years' worth of clean water fees that they refuse to pay, yeah, so there are barriers.
Yeah, and that's a barrier. And how do we get past some of those points? I mean, those are major issues. That's a funding issue. It's a lack of, you know, that's a bad gig. It all costs us money there. So anyway.
Here we are after the schools and the state owes us.
I was wondering where the state owed us that. How much money is that total?
Over $230,000 in fees. It's risen to $400,000, including penalties and interest.
And tell them the deal what they get.
And by the way, by state law, they're only required to pay 30% of the fee.
Oh.
That's a problem.
Are we unique, or they treat every county like that?
No, states, well, in terms of not paying,
yeah.
Don't know for sure. Just discovered this, but they, you know, the law says 30% of the fee, and the state and the county need to collaborate on a plan, and a plan must be submitted, or they don't have to pay the next year's fee, right?
Submitted to who? Who is the plan submitted to?
DOT.
Okay.
DOT. Yeah. And their 30%, by the way, has to be corralled. And under state law, can only be used for a DOT facility.
Right.
And that's what has caused us to do this inventory to see what facilities do we have that are treating DOT water. So not only do they get a 70% discount, even the 30% we can't use for our regular clean water program, we have to set it aside to work on DOT facilities. So they passed the clean water law and essentially exempted themselves from it.
How might we as a commission help you go after those fees?
Well, we're actually taking action on the county. There's a new Secretary of Transportation, a new department director, so I've sent her a letter. She wasn't aware of it, okay? So she's doing her due diligence with her people to find out why they didn't pay. We're providing our documentation to them, showing them that they should pay, and so we're in that situation right now. They may pay. We may have to compel them to pay legally.
Who maintains their facilities, Don?
Who maintains the
washout facilities?
The ones that are solely controlled by them are maintained by them. But as I said, we have 17 facilities and maybe more that we share the treatment with, and we maintain those.
Is this the same in other counties? Within the state?
Well, it's a state law. It's a state law. Whether or not they're refusing to pay other counties, I don't know that we know that for sure.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see.
Okay.
You got nowhere to run.
Can we follow up on the meeting with the commissioners? Just, these are the notes that I took.
Okay.
Provided everybody.
Oh, terrific.
Okay. And there's nothing more than my interpretation of what I was hearing as I was writing the period.
Okay. I think you did a good job.
And so my thought was trying to identify the things that I heard to commissioners, and some of those have been addressed. I have made some other notes. And I'm going to make a suggestion, this is not a formal per se, but for discussion that what I heard the commissioner saying is that they would like things that are actionable. They would like defined time frames, looking for material that's useful, and want results. Okay, that's what I'm hearing.
Perfect.
The theme. So to that end or that extent, then perhaps there's significant value in the next couple of months or something for the group actually identifying the activities, the programs that we think we might be able to contribute on, prioritize them, and then pick off maybe three. I don't know what kind of phrase, but pick them off. And then figure out whether it's a collective effort, whether we break into little sub-teams, or whatever the structure is,
mm-hmm.
and the deliverables and the time frames to go with that. Sorry, I'm a process guy. Okay. I like things laid out, nailed down,
yeah,
and set up. So so that would be sort of a suggestion. So that my intent here was just to let you see what, now the others that were there may have seen things different and interpreted them different, but that would be sort of my suggestion, that we set up a time frame to nail down the projects we want to work on to include in the next annual report, and that way Jim doesn't have to write the whole thing himself. We can have these pieces so we can contribute in. So that's my suggestion.
Could this be included for us to, is there some way that you were just delivered this paper? Can we see it too?
Which paper?
Oh, the notes?
Yeah.
Oh,
sure. Sure.
Write a note?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for compiling this, Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's what...
In fact, I believe you could even watch it. Wouldn't it be taped? Isn't it... Are those work sessions are not there?
The audio is very bad.
The audio is terrible in that meeting?
Can't hear me.
You had to sit in front of the microphone for it really to pick up.
Your notes are probably more accurate because the audio was hard to hear.
This is very staticky, and I don't know why.
It's in the same room here.
Yeah, right in here.
Has anybody ever sat through one of our meetings and listened to it?
This meeting?
It's hard.
But it probably depends on the voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of us.
You're all right, Dick. I'm all right. I don't know about the rest of you. Yeah.
Not fun.
These people with a soft voice, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I never hear you.
Yeah. Okay. So, do we have anything else? No, public comment. Any more public comment over there? Perfect.
You know, getting involved in counseling.
That'd be fun.
And I discovered that you didn't.
Oh. I'll take that as a compliment.
You are experiencing some of the same problems that has been experienced in the past with this group. Your most powerful influence as a group is not upon the staff people here that attend these meetings, because they are working, you know, 5 days a week, 40-hour weeks, and your impact is like the wings of a mosquito erosion upon a steel ball bearing or something like that. It's just infinitesimal. But one of the most powerful things that you can do is to be advisory to the policymakers. And if you could come up with, like you were saying here, what really matters the most to you as a group, and come up with a series of white papers. I really, truly believe that there's no more than possible than maybe one or two in the entire year that's even possible. Even with, and now that you've been cut in your number of meetings, you're going to have to do those, you know, in other meetings than your formal meetings. And this is a new commitment. This is a new process. And I have hope that you may be able to prevail this way, and I really hope, urge you to take on the issues of which you feel passionately about and feel that you may be able to positively inform the commissioners. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Tom. So that's why, and I totally agree with the one or two, and that's, we take on a couple of projects, take them all the way to the end, make some recommendations on it. If we get, you know, after those are done, we'll come up with something else. But, you know, it's a limited amount of time, a limited amount of meetings.
Maybe a suggestion between now and then for the next meeting, if people could perhaps collect their thoughts on the couple of things that you think this group might do that would have the most value and impact. Just a suggestion.
Well, I think
I
think we have a couple of things.
Yeah, David's going to come out with
part of the question is, will they be, are some of them time limited? In other words, they'll be done in 3 or 4 months,
versus that will take somewhat longer.
We can't get, we can't know that, Dick, until we see what they are.
No, no, but if we have a deliverable, for instance, to Mr. Benton, that will be in the September, October, November time frame.
It'll be in the November. It'll end up being in November. It will end up being
not that
it
won't carry on from there.
No, no, it'll get, that's, yeah. No,
but it may, that may be the essential input at that particular point. So I'm suggesting
we get some input back, and
there might be some additional material.
Let's see, work on this, you know. But if we spread our, if we get too spread out and stuff, we're not going to get things accomplished. We got to take a couple of these items and work on them and get them done. And if we overdo it, people get burned out, then people will disengage from it. All right. So let's take the things that we got some enthusiasm for and work on them, and get something back to the Board of Commissioners. And that was something that was brought up a year ago, that, you know, we want to, and it doesn't, you know, it can be done in a memo. It doesn't have to be, this doesn't have to be a super complex type of, you know, we don't have to wordsmith it to death, all right? We don't have to, you know, we just got to have our valuable input put in there, you know, if we have consensus on it, you know, what the difference opinions were on it, and get it forwarded to them so they can act on it, and then we can go to something else and have a positive impact. So that's my opinion.
I've seen a lot of important work get done in the auction committee, you know, so they can be very valuable.
Can I make one last input, Jim?
Maybe. There's a lot of other things I think that we may want to put on the calendar, like, for instance, developing, you know, we're talking about education programs and impacts and things like that. Something that we may want to look at, a traveling roadshow to the neighborhood associations.
We did that.
Like stakeholder meetings.
We need to bump that back up.
Yeah.
So that we can get the message out about what's really happening and talk to them about, you know, maybe attending education programs or whatever we decide to do. But having that real community touchy-feely thing, I think, is very important.
I concur, Commissioner. That's something I brought up earlier in that the press release regarding Mr. Benton.
Yeah, and I don't know if any of you went to the Parade of Homes recently out here at Erickson Farms. I was going through a home, and this lady came up, and she said, "Are you the builder?" And she said, "Well, yes, what can I do for you?" And she says, "Oh, no, I want you to give you this." And she handed him a postcard or something of acknowledgement. And she said, let me get her words right, "It is so nice to see a house plan reflected for the senior population," meaning having a master on the main and not a ton of stairs to, you know, go by the daily living. And she gave him an acknowledgement. And it was, she was from the Council on Aging.
Okay.
Oh, Bill Ritchie?
No, it was a lady. Okay.
Bill Ritchie.
You know, I don't know, maybe there's some opportunities there that we need to piggyback on with these.
That's
you
a
know,
good idea.
And the builders, my gosh, there's a whole industry there that we should be shaking hands with, folks.
You know, Susan, you got a great idea. I think in between the meetings, as things come up, like Dick did, you know, write down some notes, bring to the meetings, and share these kind of things.
Actually wasn't on our, we have our communications with the public, and that wasn't...
Well, this is not a formal meeting.
Well, that's right. But
did you hit the gavel? Did you get the gavel?
No.
I think
I'm going to. All right. Go ahead.
Did you go now?
Oh, I'm sorry. Jim?
That's okay. I'm always in awe of Tom's eloquence. As I have explained to people over my lifetime, I'm that C-plus student from my elementary school right through to until I got to college. You know, reading, English, all of that. So I'm not nearly as eloquent as I am. Just have some really small thoughts here, but things that are kind of important to me. When you were first talking, you were talking about, you know, fertilizing your farm or something. You mentioned buffers, and that term buffer is something that's important to me. it's always kind of relative to me. When I was going through the process, when I worked for an engineering firm doing wetland delineations, then mitigation design construction and monitoring, one of the things that the engineer that was the head of this business would always kind of stress with us is that when you're talking a closely mold lawn, you know, like along some of the rivers around here, essentially he wanted us, when we were figuring out our process, to consider those being an impervious surface, because essentially if it's like a loam soil or a silt loam or worse, that essentially it's closely mowed, that all that runoff, it's runoff, it's going to go right into wherever it goes down the slope. And that was always a consideration as far as fertilization and that sort of thing. And it's something that's really think about when you're talking buffers, especially those kind of buffers. So the other thing was that, and it's something that was really curious to me, the idea of fees for like newspapers. What I heard you say, Don, was that that the study in California was 14% paper. Now, was that specifically newspaper that was part of that, or was it just paper?
It didn't say in the study. It's
no, okay, that's paper. Okay. That's okay. But I was really interested in that.
I doubt it. It probably included paper boats.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Because you know, first thing that I thought of, you know, my background was that newspaper is really biodegradable. I mean, all my compost bins, that's where my newspapers normally go, most of them. But the other thing I thought of, because I thought it was an important thing I think of as far as that idea of yours and the commissioner said. I think of that today with my kids and my stepkids and me. My wife, I fight about one of these things in that little tiny piece of crap. And I thought, you know, newspapers, even though we get a newspaper at our house, are kind of a baby boomer pollutant. Because these days, if I say, I show a newspaper article to one of my kids, they say I saw that on my smartphone. You know, okay, so one consideration as far as newspapers, they think of that as a baby boomer pollutant. And it's something that's kind of diminishing return as far as 5 years from now, 10 years from now. There's going to be less and less of that. So it's something that the last thing.
Columbia isn't going to like that. Sorry.
I know. I really hope
you say that. Columbia is polluting all the way to California?
Huh?
The Columbian is polluting all the way to California. Is that what you're sharing?
And that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just, you know, and Lou wouldn't like hearing that either. So, but then the other thing, and this is something that's totally separate from all this, is when you're talking to neighbors of all these facilities. One of the things that I did in a little kind of an internship, a little short thing that I did for Brian Carlson, was that I found that there's an awful lot of these facilities that seasonally are quite wet. And seasonally, if you did not mow the bottom of them, they are full of sedges and rushes, which technically are waterproof, or fireproof, excuse me. They don't turn into a range fire. And because we have this natural drawdown in our wetlands around here, where, you know, sedges and rushes just sit there, and the drawdown might be 3 feet,
right?
You know, and so they're made to sit there with this kind of waxy coating that's probably impervious to fire. And yet you have facilities, and I know one that the city has on 192nd, that they mow the crap out of that thing, even though if you just leave it go, in the middle of summer, it's got 6-foot-tall bulrushes growing in the middle of it that don't burn. Now, I know the concern of the public was that we're going to have a fire mow that thing, but it's something to consider as far as cost savings, because if you have stormwater facilities that are seasonally wet, and if you just leave them be and they end up with bulrushes in the middle of them, they're going to have natural drawdown. It's going to be bone dry in there, but those things are not going to burn like the slopes that normally are kind of mowed.
Yeah. I live next to a golf course, and they have just adopted just that. How about areas in where they used to mow?
Yeah.
They have now just let the grass grow in certain areas, and they've reduced their labor costs.
How about that?
Now we've got the other benefits you're talking about here, because that's what they are now just leaving these areas, and it's been a benefit to the golf courses to do just that.
For me, it just from my interest, it's kind of an environmentally sound idea.
Well, it's pretty.
Why not? I like the damage way, going there and flying around, all that kind of stuff. But that's all. That's
yeah, there's a ton of maintenance money, too.
Yeah, it really does.
It also appeals to the more environmental savvy type of people, leaving things as they are.
Right. That's all I have.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. You know, it's interesting, though, when we talk about chemicals going into it, there's been more than one
stormwater facility that's been totally wiped out, the vegetation. I totally agree with you on, you know, let it go. But so over application, and I'm a herbicide guy, okay. I spent over $2,000 on herbicide this year, but I know it's bad, Tom. But I actually use an amine on part of. I use a more environmentally friendly stuff. I use Capstone, which is a mixture of Garland and Milestone. Anyway, they killed off. It's interesting. I've seen total annihilation of a stormwater facility from over-application of herbicide. That's lack of education.
I know about that personally from my time working with Dr. Carlson and some of his.
Kind of weird. I mean, it's dead. But, all right.
Thank you, sir.
I am going to make a motion. We're going to adjourn. Make a motion to adjourn. Second.
Okay.
All right. Second. Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.